You're listening to the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast hosted by Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, and Brad Tarver. Well, it's Saturday, October 29th. It's the day after New Mac Day, and the new MacBook Pros have been announced. So let's get into that. So Brad and Jim, you ordered. What are your impressions?
I was super excited. I actually didn't get to watch most of the town hall on Thursday. I was rolling off, getting ready to head out of town from work. I caught the very end of it, but I caught it just in time to watch the end of the town hall and then hit refresh on the Buy Me page until it was available. And I ordered the higher end 15-inch model. The only change I made to it was I went ahead and bumped up the video card. It was like $100. For me, I couldn't justify the $200 for the CPU. I just don't see much difference in the two CPU offerings.
So let me ask you that. Just I got to say this, because this is a philosophical difference. If you're going to have a computer and you're going to keep it for a long time, and let's face it, they usually have, at least for me, I keep my Macs on an average of like 6 years. Why not just, you're going to be financing it anyway. Just roll it into the cost. Go for the full CPU. Like, why not?
I had a budget that I wanted to stick under with AppleCare and everything else. That kept me under $3,500, which I think is plenty enough money to spend on the laptop. That was kind of where I'd set my limit, and that's about what I spent.
Same here.
With the AppleCare added ins. I mean, the CPU is, we're just not CPU limited anymore. If there was some, if it was default 8 gigs of RAM, I definitely would have made it 16. And then the hard drive, I've got 512 in the one I have now, and I've never come close to filling it up. I was just like, 512 is fine. Especially since USB-C external drives are going to be so fast. If I want to add something, then I can get an external drive and put it on there and everything. Most stuff's in the cloud. It allowed me to stick to my budget. That worked for me. So
it's 16 gigs of RAM you have, right?
Yeah, 16 is the default for that upper end model. Like, there's two models for the 15, and the only change I made was the video, and it was an extra $100 for go to 2 gigs to 4 gigs for video, and I figured that was worth it just in case I stumble across a couple of 4K, 5K monitors over the next couple of years. At least I know that it'll be able to handle that. That was, for me, that was more important than the CPU. I don't play games on it, and if I did play games on it, they wouldn't be new games. They would probably be old games. So.
Do you ever do any kind of rendering or video or audio or anything on the Mac where it would benefit?
Nope, I let you handle all of that. I run VMs. I run databases and VMs to do databases. And so that's pretty much it.
I was going to say, there's a case for getting the most powerful CPU you can, especially if you do a lot of virtualization.
I do notice that my CPU will spike with parallels on Windows sometimes. So the Windows side just kind of decides, I'm just going to use a lot of CPU, and that's how it is, and I never really figure out why.
Checking for Windows updates.
Probably. That's like the most demanding thing on the whole operating system. So I can run SQL Server on there, and it's less demanding than checking for Windows updates. So again, I was real excited. I think it looks like a great machine. I've been wanting one for about 6 months now. I was ready to upgrade 6 months ago, and I've just been putting it off, waiting for this announcement. And, I kept thinking it was going to come, and kept thinking it was going to come. And again, as soon as that page came up, allowed me to order, I clicked buy. What about you, Brad?
I just went 13-inch, maxed out, 1 terabyte, 16 gig of RAM. And it gave you the option 8 or 16, whatever the fastest CPU was. I think it was the 3.3, something like that. Anyway, I just pushed all the sliders to 100 and went with that. Because I know, I'm kind of like Brian in the aspect that,
oh yeah,
I know I'm going to have it for at least 4 years. And I was like you 6 months ago, mainly because my AppleCare warranty ran out on my current MacBook Pro back in March of this year. It was already in the back of my mind, but I was thinking it's been a while since they've refreshed them. So I'm going to just stick it out and wait. Pretty much baby my laptop anyway. So I wasn't real worried about it not making it for another 6 months to even a year. My previous MacBook, or the one I have now, it's the mid 2012 model. The one where you could actually change the RAM and thing wasn't stuck. You weren't stuck with what you got. So I had taken out the super drive and put in a second SSD. So I have 1.5 terabytes of storage in it, and I'm probably at about 70% on it, mainly because it's got a lot of movies and music on it, and I use that whenever I'm working. And I need my laptop kind of like a Swiss Army knife. I program routers and do things that network administrators do. So I may have 20 minutes of downtime while something reboots or whatever it may be doing. I've got some time to kill, either listen to podcasts or listen to music or whatever.
I'm sort of like you on this. I'll play hypothetical for a minute. If I were in the market to get a MacBook Pro, I don't know. The size of the SSD is kind of important to me. I know on the one that I have now, the 1 terabyte, and again, because I use it as a work machine, I end up having VMs on there. The notion, I'll never go back to having a 512 ever again. That for me, that's just way too small. If I want to put something on there, I either had a 256 or something on my MacBook Air, or maybe I had a 128 or something ridiculous. And those were tiny, but I do a lot of VMs and I'll put a lot of large movie files, those types of things. 512 would really be pushing it. 1 terabyte is the largest SSD that I could get on my iMac when I bought it last December. And even that kind of feels constrained, but again, not so much because it's a stationary computer. I have access to a 20 terabyte disk array that I have hooked to it. I have 128 gig thumb drives that I keep scattered around like, you know, M&Ms in a bowl. So I can always add more storage if I need something in a pinch. But this is the first model that allowed up to a 2 terabyte SSD in the thing, which, you know, I'm glad I didn't even go to the store page and try to configure one, because it would have broke my heart not to hit buy.
It's 42 or 4300 with a maxed out 15, because I priced it out yesterday just for giggles.
For me, I mean, the difference in a 512 and the 1 terabyte is $400 from Apple. And that just, you know, that shot me up into the 4,000 region instead of the 3,000 region that I wanted to stick around. I just knew I could buy a terabyte or more hard drives going forward and hook them into all those USB-C ports. So it was 400 more for the 1 terabyte and 1200 more for the 2. And and the machine doesn't quite, is not going to last as long for me. I mean, this is a traveling machine. I travel almost every week for work. And that's the reason I wanted to upgrade, is because I have a 13 now that I'm using for work. So I got a new job and they had to bring your own policy. And I'm like, oh, you're going to give me a crappy PC or I can use my Mac? Yeah, I'll use my Mac. But I had a 13-inch MacBook Pro. And so I've been wanting the 15 because of, you know, just better, bigger screen.
The more screen real estate.
Right. And so, you know, if this thing lasts me 2, maybe 3 years, I mean, you know, it's going into a backpack and going on site every week, and it's traveling with me every week. So, you know, it's going to be a workhorse, you know, in the hotel rooms and wherever else this thing goes. So it's definitely not a sit on the desk and plug the monitor into it and never open the clamshell MacBook. You know, it's going to do its road warrior duties.
However, this is, for all intents and purposes, your primary computer, right? So this is really your only computer that you use on a regular basis, whether you're at home or work, right?
Correct. So I have a Mac Mini here at the house that I use as a, you know, kind of a server, a home base, where I've got some big drives hanging off of it to access things from the road or wherever. But yeah, this is my primary computer.
And see, that would be my use case for wanting to pack as much internal storage or whatever into it. But if it were my own, that would be, if I were using it for double duty, I would absolutely want, I mean, I would right there with you. The 2 terabyte, 1200, that would sting a little bit. That would give me pause just because of the cost differential. But the 1 terabyte seems about right. Of course, this wouldn't be Apple if they didn't take things away. So there is no more SD slot, which I actually had a friend text me on the day of the announcement. Like, this is lame. They took away my
SD. You just need one more dongle.
Because I was like, what are you using an SD card slot for? It's like my digital camera. I'm like, well, don't you have a cable for it? Or doesn't it do Wi-Fi? Or, well, yeah, but I mean, this was kind of cool. You know, I'm actually surprised that the SD slot stuck around on the MacBook Pro for as long as it did. It was a very un-Apple-like slot. I think there's still one on the iMac. If I turn mine around right now, there's probably one on the back of it.
There's one on there.
So yeah, I wouldn't expect it to stick around much longer either. But the taking away of the mini DisplayPort, which has been on there for years and years at this point, I'm a little sad to see that go, but I guess it makes sense. So you know, you got the 4 USB-C slots, no more USB-A. Which, you know, I'm glad to see the USB-A slot die. You know, I made a joke on Twitter this week that I hope when the guy who invented USB-A dies, they lower his casket into the ground, they have to pull it back and put it the other way and then lower it back again. Because even though I have a 50% chance of plugging in a USB a connector, I have a 100% failure rate on it. I never get it right on the first try ever. You know, I'm glad to see the USB-C. I've seen a lot of people.
That's not it.
I've seen a lot of people making hay on Twitter about this is the new reality. And they had like the dongle coming off of the MacBook, coming off of the iPhone. Like they had like these series of dongles to connect. And yeah, it makes for a funny picture, but it was ridiculous. Because if you want to connect your iPhone with a Lightning port to your Mac, you use the same cable that I've used for a year, which is the USB-C to Lightning cable. That's what I use to fast charge my iPad. And it's like 20 or 30 bucks or something. And, you know, you're done. But, you know I've seen the humorous pictures. Maybe we'll put a link in the show notes where someone had a dongle coming out of the MacBook that was a USB-C that split it off into a Lightning cable that had another dongle so they could use their headphones or something. It made for a funny picture, but it was really sort of an exaggeration.
That will sort of be my situation. Because like I was talking about programming routers, I carry a rollover cable with me, a serial cable. The Mac, the 9-pin serial adapters were long gone. So I've always had a USB to serial adapter and a rollover cable in my backpack. And so now it'll be dongle to USB serial adapter to the rollover cable.
So I'm holding up, I know nobody on the podcast will be able to see this, but I'm holding up a Cocoon Gridit. And I have, and this is actually a small assortment of just some of my most essential, where I have a dual Lightning and micro USB. I have the USB connector. I have a couple of retractable Lightning cables. But I mean, it's been a fact of life for me for so long that I don't know. I'm kind of unfazed by it. I've long since accepted that I'm going to have it. I would much rather have a dongle or something that I have to carry in a case than actually have something that makes my device thicker or heavier constantly, whether I'm using it or not.
Well, it just makes me think about, you know, I said Swiss Army knife earlier, but it kind of makes you just sort of the Boy Scout of computer guys, because you wind up with everything in your bag that you may need. So you're in the cubicle next to somebody else and they say, hey, blah, I left this at the house. You can just hand them this certain dongle or adapter for 10 minutes or whatever and make sure you get it back from them before they split or before you split.
Yeah, it's definitely just the whatever your use case is. You're going to not need it more than you actually need it.
And I had a picture in my head the other day with the MacBook with four dongles hanging off of it. And I kind of imagined like Chulu Rising or the Flying Spaghetti Monster or something.
Hey, there is a headphone jack. So we've got that. That's still there.
Which honestly, you got to think that's kind of weird. Within a month of removing it from the phone and all of the hoopla that ensued, for them to still include one on the MacBook. I mean, sure, there's no reason they shouldn't have, but now you have to have, now they have to make the other adapter that has the Lightning to standard port on the other end so that you can take your earpods from your iPhone 7 and be able to plug them in.
Kind of like our use case here, if you're going to use a MacBook to do podcasts, you're going to have a set of analog headphones for the zero latency type effect, if you will, that you need for when you're recording. So I can see that.
I plug them into my microphone directly and that connects back to the computer via USB. So
same here. My headphones are plugged into my mic.
How long until, say, the iPad Pro starts shipping with the USB-C cable instead of the USB-A cable that it has now? Because I know, like you said, Brian, you charge yours with the USB-C, and I went out and bought the USB-C charger and cable for my iPad Pro as well, because it's just so much faster than even the 12-watt iPad charger. So now they're selling iPads and iPhones that come with a cable that without a dongle, you can't even plug into their top laptop. And so to me, it's almost like next year when you buy an iPhone, you'll be given a choice. Like you'll have like one of your options when you check out will be, do you want USB-A here? Do you want USB-C? It almost seems like that. I mean, I don't know that Apple would do that, because Apple, it's definitely something to think about.
Well, there's so much USB-A saturation around literally the world. Not everybody in the world is going to run off and go buy a new $2,000 USB-C only laptop. Still got billions of people who have PCs with USB-A on them. So, you know, you can't leave out the rest of the world for three guys and a podcast, you know, that kind of deal.
If I built a house now, you know, I would want all of my outlets to have USB plugs on them in addition to, you know, your standard electrical jack. And so now I'm thinking, well, maybe I don't want USB-A plugs on them. Maybe I want a USB-A and a USB-C or, you know, I mean, this is a kind of a weird transition time for that type of plug. Also, when you throw in the Lightning connector too, it almost makes sense to me for Apple to have USB-C in the phone instead of Lightning, but, you know, they're not going to do that. So it's just, there is a weird mix going on here. And I mean, it's just, I think I mentioned it to y'all this week, is like now, anytime you buy anything made by Apple, you know, don't forget about the dongle tax, because you buy a phone and you're going to need extra dongles. You buy an iPad, you buy it now, you know, that the new MacBook, you know, that dongle tax is going to add in. And that was another one of my considerations when I was trying to keep under my budget. I bought the laptop and I bought the Apple Care, and I still haven't bought the cable that it's going to take for me to hook it to my monitor and the other adapters that I need for the road, like Ethernet or an HDMI adapter or VGA when I'm on site somewhere and I need to plug into an external monitor. So I'm going to have to add all that into the cost as well, because I don't have any of those. Well, I have them for my current MacBook, and I know some of that might be compatible if I buy another adapter or something, but it just, you know, it definitely adds up quickly.
Though at least they've adopted a standard, right? When they switch from the 30-pin to Lightning, people complained, oh, you're using proprietary. So they move from one standard to a new standard that's universal. It's sort of like a no-win situation for Apple. No matter what they do, people are going to bitch and complain because, you know, well, now everything I had before. But again, that's how thing marches forward, right? If we kept that attitude, we'd all still have parallel ports or serial ports.
Well, remember the original couple of versions of ClickWheel iPods came with a FireWire port on the top. And when you bought a new, like maybe the third or the fourth generation ClickWheel iPod, it came with a USB and a FireWire cable. And the AC adapter was a FireWire interface on it, not a USB interface. So I remember buying another one. It was still 30-pin, but it was once the FireWire on the iPad had gone the way of the dodo, and I tried to plug up the FireWire charger to my new iPod, and it basically gave me a message on the screen saying FireWire is not compatible. So you know that they've removed those drivers from the kernel that's living in that iPod. I agree with Brian on that. It's a normal transition. I do feel like, to spin off of what Jim was saying about Apple's in a funny place between they have USB-C here and USB-A here, it's sort of like Apple needs to create a new team just to make sure all the USB lines up on all their across the product lines.
I think what makes it worse is that you see under Tim Cook's leadership, you see products that hang around a lot longer than what they did under the Steve Jobs years. With Steve, when they would introduce a new product, the previous generation had a short life and then it was gone, right? Remember, this is the same company that sold the original iPad 2, not the iPad Air 2, but the iPad 2 from 2011. That thing hung around for years and years and years, and long after everything else had moved to Lightning cables. You're just seeing these things hang around. You have some of these older products that they keep in for those low price points. That the MacBook that they just discontinued now that still had an optical media drive in it, right? As far back as 2009, Apple was saying optical media was dead. And until last week, you could still buy a single model that had like an optical drive in it.
Well, that also carries over to the macOS compatibility, because if you'll recall back when you had, say, Lion or Mountain Lion come out, it would only support like the last two generations of the laptop. And now Sierra has come out and it supports five or six or seven generations back to MacBooks. So that philosophy definitely carries over.
The late 2009 iMac that I let my parents use, that when I bought this the 2015 one I'm using now, that runs Sierra. So that was like, you know, 7 years.
My daughter's white MacBook from mid-2010 runs Sierra.
So, I mean, that's, I don't know that you would, you know, no one likes to say that, well, if Steve were still here, but that is a fair statement that.
But if Steve were still here.
Steve.
He was a lot more brutal about killing off the old and moving you to the new, which honestly is, again, it's a can't win scenario. If you leave these older things hanging around, people will complain that, well, no, this is mixed. I can't even, there's two different Macs and it's completely different. But if you change it, then it's just like, well, they're predatory. They want you to, they're making all their money off cables.
They were saying that about Microsoft 10 years ago, though, whenever they would do forced upgrades with Office and forced upgrades with Windows. And I guess that's why Windows XP hung around for 15 years before they finally killed it.
So like the other day I was at work, I was showing a coworker the other day, the Belkin Rockstar, because they were talking about how do you charge and do the other thing at the same time? I'm like, well, there's a cable. And they said, well, you know, of course there is. This is how Apple makes their money. I'm like, Apple didn't make this cable. This is a Belkin cable. Apple didn't make this. They want you to use AirPods, which they still haven't released. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of an unfair rap because the people making the solution to this aren't Apple. They don't want you to use wired things in most cases. This is what they're nudging you toward.
Well, no matter how many people you try to please, you can't please everybody.
I think we also need to bring up, is it Thunderbolt 3 or USB-C? That's just confusing to me.
Emacs sucks. VI rules.
I'm with you on that one. Brad had pointed out, too, with Thunderbolt 2, you know, that was all over mini DisplayPort before for the connector. So they have a history of you know, it's the underlying technology. The cable at which you transfer it is not really the big deal, or the connector type, I guess. I never really gave it much thought, but I guess the underlying technology is really on the motherboard as opposed to the...
Well, when FireWire became prevalent, you see FireWire, Macintosh, Apple, blah, blah, blah. And then the Sony Vaio comes along and it's got this little port on the side and it says IEEE 1394. And I'm like, what the hell is that? And then you find out IEEE 1394 is the same as FireWire. So, you know, Apple does have its own way of branding the plugs.
But you also had the different type of FireWire connectors, which were annoying. And while we're on this subject, since people seem to have short-lived memories, whenever we talk about these connectors, do you guys remember before the days of smartphones when you would buy, I can remember buying my parents or buying myself little Samsung phones that were not smartphones, and every single year they would have a different proprietary connector that I had never seen before in my life, would never work on any model of phone. You could buy a phone in 1 year and go out and buy one 6 months later from the same manufacturer, and it would be a completely different proprietary cable.
That's right.
People seem to have forgotten this. We had, from 2001 to 2012, we had one cable for charging all iOS devices, the 30-pin. They change it in 2012. People lose their minds. How dare they? It's like...
Well, but they changed it to another proprietary cable, which Apple had agreed at one point to this
Never change.
Well, no, this standardized consortium where everybody had agreed we're going to come up with one cable, I think was a big thing in the EU, and that ended up being micro USB. Besides them changing it, which, yeah, that was a big deal, period. Just the fact that they went away from the 30-pin and it was so prevalent. It's the fact that they changed away from the 30-pin and they didn't change to the one thing that everybody else was using. They still came up with their own proprietary plug. The immediate hubbub was, what do you mean you're getting rid of this 30-pin? I've got six of these cables all over the place. Now I've got to replace every one of them. And then the next hubbub 3 months later was, oh, you're replacing it, and you're replacing it with something else that's proprietary that doesn't work with all these other cables that I already have.
The one complaint I have about the 30-pin to Lightning transition is I have two Alpine radios, aftermarket radios, in two of my cars. We have two Toyotas that had, you know, the stock Toyota radios, and I put Alpines in both of them so that we could listen to our iPods in them. This is before Bluetooth was necessarily prevalent in all the domestically made or even any of the cars. It wasn't just a normal option. You had to go buy an adapter that went in behind the dash to do the Bluetooth for you. Anyway, I had, you know, put these things in. I have a USB cable that attaches to the back of the radio. Then I run the cable through the back of the glove box, and it comes out to a 30-pin adapter. Well, whatever is in that radio, its drivers, or whatever you want to call it, is not Lightning compatible. And even though they made a little 6-inch Lightning cable, my Lightning devices do not work. So I still have 30-pin iPods in my two Toyotas. And I know it's time to either buy a Bluetooth radio, or buy a new car, or even buy a radio that has the Lightning capability on it, you know, the newer version of the Alpine. But, you know, that's just one more $300 radio or some sort of accessory, you know, that's not as easily replaced as a cable. Now, I did these myself. It's not hard to pull a Toyota dash apart and put a radio in, but it's still one of those things where it takes a Saturday, you know, an hour on a Saturday afternoon and $300 out of your pocket while your daughter's dancing around waiting for you to be done with, are you done with my car yet, Dad?
That's pretty funny. That's pretty funny. I can definitely see Brad trying to put in a car stereo with some. Are you done yet? Are you done yet? Are you done yet?
Well, my precursor now, like we are looking for a new car for my wife. We're test driving and doing all that stuff. And the precursor is she doesn't like cloth seats. She's just not going to do it. She's, you know, we are all accident prone. And the best way to avoid those cloth seat accidents where you wind up with little puddle of chocolate on the seat and it winds up looking like poop forever until you clean it off is you go with leather seats. So our precursors are leather seats and now Bluetooth. I mean, that's pretty, and a backup camera.
If there was any bit of technology that I was sad to see go, it's the MagSafe connector is no longer a part of it. However, and we'll put a link to the to this in the show notes, there is a breakaway USB-C connector that Griffin Technologies sells. So it basically is a magnetic USB-C plug that is permanently in your USB-C slot. You plug your connector into that, and if something happens, you trip on it, it pulls the connector out of the little nubbin that's sticking out of your USB-C slot.
Now, I wouldn't say permanently. Obviously, it's stuck into the USB port. It's not like you've modded your laptop to make it stay forever. So
yeah, that's a good distinction. I mean, when I say permanently, it's going to be plugged into the slot that you're going to use for charging. So with USB-C,
you'll probably leave it there permanently.
Right. With USB-C, you can charge from just about any of those ports. So you don't really have just one dedicated charging port anymore. But you're going to leave it in the one that you want to use for charging, presumably.
What I'm worried about is I can see the, you know, the round edges of the USB-C magnetic port or magnetic plug. Are the USB-C ports far enough apart on the new iMacs, since you have two on each side now, or the new MacBook Pros, I'm sorry, are they far enough apart to where they won't overlap? Because I've always had a problem with USB like that on my current MacBook Pro, because one USB drive, like a thumb drive, maybe too wide, and then you have to take your mouse transceiver out or something, because I use a Microsoft mouse. I don't use the Apple mouse. So you've always got some overlap, possibly.
So I use an external mouse as well, and I've right now I'm using USB. It does USB and Bluetooth. I prefer Logitech. To me, the USB one just works better. So hopefully the Bluetooth is better on the MacBook Pro, to where I can just use the Bluetooth. Just hearing Brian, it made me think of something else that I have to buy now, which is an extra AC adapter, because right now I have a couple of them for my MacBook Pro. So now I'm going to need one that stays permanently here at my desk at home, and also one that stays in my laptop bag, because I don't want to have to keep unplugging it and bringing it with me and then plugging it back in when I get home. So I need one. I need two of those. So there's yet another expense of, you know, it's probably what, $80 from Apple is my guess, is what the USB-C charger will run about that. And so just just another add-on. And here, yes, I'm complaining, but I will love that laptop like my firstborn. I mean, I'm complaining, but I also,
after your dogs,
right after my dogs, I'm gonna love it. I know I'm gonna love it. It's gonna be my most prized possession. But that, you know, that doesn't keep me from complaining. I guess it's my inner John coming out here, that I can just complain about something that I know I'm gonna love so much.
Well, yesterday I went ahead and added the three dongles, and then after the fact, I guess 3 hours later, I'm like, you know, I need a second USB to USB adapter, because I may want to use my mouse and my serial cable at the same time, or my mouse and my thumb drive at the same time. I mean, it's no big deal. It's a $19 adapter, but still, I wish I had added it so then I'd have it on the day it arrives. But whatever, I guess it's not that big of a deal.
How often do you guys find yourself plugging things into your laptop on a regular basis? Because this I find genuinely fascinating, because I hear people, and you guys are a perfect example of, I got to get a hub, I got to get this, I got to get that. How often do you really plug stuff into your MacBook Pros currently?
I do it a lot. I rarely ever pull my MacBook out of the bag at home. It's not my one computer. So when I'm traveling, it all gets packed up. I may not take the USB transceiver out for the mouse. It may stay in a USB port. But if I'm on a job site and I need to move some files around, I don't just program routers. I also do a lot of VM work, or, you know, system integration type things, where I may touch three different types of system, three different architectures at the same time. And I need to be able to swap back and forth between Windows, Mac, whatever, or Linux even. So that's where the VMs come in, really helpful. But at the same time, you know, I'm all the time, I'll be in an office full of ladies or something, and they say, hey, where's such and such? Oh, I have that movie, you know, whatever, right here. And I'll copy it for them and leave it on their computer, or I'll even copy it to their phone for them, and then they have it. It's just one of those things, you know, you're the nice IT guy, and these are one of those places that don't have IT on staff. So these folks may see you once a month, and they flood you with questions, and you have to be ready, you know, not just to come in and unplug something from the Ethernet switch in the closet or plug something up. You've got to kind of be their Boy Scout, if you will, because they just don't keep up with tech news, or they just don't do what we do. They're not ready to just take anything on at a whim. So I need to be able to have two USB things at the same time, or swap them around several times. Every time you pack that laptop up, put it in the bag, put it in the car, blah, blah, blah. You know, you're always unplugging, plugging, you know, those things. Whereas at home, I've got four USB ports on the back of my iMac, got a hub for just those extra few things. It sits around next to my keyboard so I can do thumb drives quickly in and out and actually do them at USB 3 speed. So that's just one of those things that is necessary for some people.
So like for myself right now, I have an adapter plugged in for my Logitech mouse that stays in all the time, and it barely protrudes from the laptop. It's one of the super shallow ones that just barely sticks out. And then I have my microphone for this podcast plugged in. I have my headphones plugged in, and then I have the MagSafe adapter.
You can plug into your mic.
Well, I just plug in directly into the laptop just because that's what I'm used to.
For ultra low latency, just plug into the mic.
Latency is very, very low.
But aside from that, what do you do on a regular basis, like in your daily use? Not podcast. Podcasting is an exception. I have a hub where I hook into all mine for that.
But that's your machine at home. So you see, this is my machine for everything. You know, you have a specific machine there that you use for podcasting that's not the same as your work machine. When I'm at work, I use a lot of USB storage. Just, you know, I copy something to a drive and give it to somebody at work, or they give me something at work. There's less of that now. We've recently added the Microsoft cloud thing at work. And, you know, we can use Dropbox, and we have, but it's not company sponsored Dropbox. Everybody just has Dropbox. But now we have the Microsoft cloud.
And it's slower because then you have to sync the file up and then they have to download it. And you know, it's still faster to just copy it onto a USB 3 disk and just hand it to them.
And if you're on a VPN, sometimes some of that stuff is harder to get to. You know, there's a lot of issues there. You know, if I'm on crappy shared guest Wi-Fi at a site, and then just depending on what site I'm on, I'm plugging into external monitors. And sometimes they're HDMI. Sometimes they're still VGA. You know, I don't know what I'm going to get for an external monitor. You're mostly just thankful that when you go on site somewhere, they throw something in front of you so you can have an external.
They have working elevators and power.
Right. I mean, you know, that.
And flushable toilets.
And in a lot of places I go, they'll put you on crappy guest Wi-Fi, or you can plug into our Ethernet and it's fast and you can get to everything without having to get on the VPN. If you get on that guest Wi-Fi, then I've got to open up the Cisco client and get connected there and all this stuff. Versus if I have a dongle for Ethernet, then I can plug that in and I'm on their network. I can connect to all their databases. So yeah, so there's a lot of different cases where I've got stuff plugging in all the time.
So you prefer physical dongles to software dongles?
In that case, I would rather not have to get onto the VPN and worry about it, you know, it dropping and blocking connections to other stuff. It's just...
Or even be able to get on the VPN and it pass through their firewall, because that may not happen either.
Right. I mean, you just... When you start messing with company VPNs, you know, everybody's set up a little bit different. If they say, if you get on our Ethernet, then you're on our network and you have an account in AD, so just authenticate yourself when you connect everything and you're just connected. That's so much easier. Then get on the guest Wi-Fi and then get on the, you know, then get on the VPN. And some sites I've been on, they'll have enterprise Wi-Fi set up, and you know, that setup is pretty simple. And once you set it up once, then you're on. But not every client is like that. So it just has to be a workhorse. It's got to be able in you know, and I think Brad's case is even more extreme than mine is, you know, with him working on routers and things like that. But you know, my case is all of my coworkers are still on their PCs, and so they have, you know, a certain way they do things. And so that's the other thing. Is I'm working with a bunch of PC users, and if they're going to hand me something on a USB drive, then you know I need to be able to read it. So that now I need an adapter to do that. And again,
make sure it's NTFS or FAT compatible.
Right. Yeah. So I've, you know, I've got the driver on there, and I've also used some, what's it, XFAT, you know, just messing around with that. But that's always weird, because if you format XFAT on a Windows machine, the Mac really doesn't like it. But if you format XFAT on a Mac machine, Windows can read it. It's, you know, just all kind of things like that. Again, I'm going to love my new MacBook. It's just, I'm going to sit here and complain about it too.
I'm going to complain till it arrives, and then I'll be a happy camper.
Exactly, Brad. Exactly.
Wah, wah, wah. All right, you whiny brats. All right, I'm going to give you a contrarian's point of view to all of this. I'm going to take the futurist point of view on this one. In Brad's case, there's no way around it. Honest to God, you just need like the computer equivalent of a toolbox. Hell, if you still had a PC that had a parallel port and a serial port built into it, you'd be all right.
But it would weigh 20 pounds.
Well, that's true. That's true. You'd also need like a
back brace
to push it. Yeah, a weight lifting belt. But so in my case, I'll use my consulting case. If I go to a client site, I don't care about hooking to a monitor because I have a monitor built into my laptop, which is why it's a laptop. So I don't ever normally worry about that. Connecting to a network, honestly, I don't think I've ever been at a client that would allow me to connect physically to their network. So if you're in a situation like that, you're actually pretty lucky. Most of the time, it's you must go through the VPN if you're a contractor. So again, whether I want to use it or not, I'm having to use Wi-Fi, whether I want to or not. And if I have to dial in, now granted, connecting your phone to your laptop, important use case. So getting like a USB-C to Lightning would probably be good just because it would be slightly faster. But in the worst case scenario, I'd be tethering to a hotspot that I create with my phone anyway. So again, wireless. Trying to think of another case. I know I'm the outlier here because I don't use external mice at all ever unless I'm on my PC. Like on my Mac devices, it is 100% trackpad or bust.
Well, that new Force Touch on the MacBook Pro may change my mind. So
I'm hoping for that as well.
That's what I'm saying. If you're used to using these things, and again, I like keeping the paradigm consistent, which is one of the reasons I don't use I use the trackpad on my Mac and I use it on my iMac, right? I use it on both places because if I'm used to doing it on one, I want to have that consistent experience everywhere. You guys aren't alone. You guys are the majority. Apparently I am in the minority on that, because even the people that I know that use Macs at work, and which is all of us pretty much, they all use mice, and it's like, it blows my mind. Like I would never, and I'm someone who's doing like graphics work. I do audio video editing in Premiere. Like there's definitely situations where I would probably benefit from just slapping a mouse on it and being done with it for some of the precision stuff that I do, but I still end up using the trackpad.
Well, if you need to nudge something over 3 pixels, yeah, that would probably be easier than your finger on a touchpad.
Yep, and I agree.
I'm going to use my touch bar for that now.
Yeah, we need to. Yeah, we've holy crap, we've been going for a while. We still haven't even covered a lot of the stuff that we wanted to. But I mean,
1%er complainers.
It really is the 1%er's complainer club this week. But you know, in defense, to sum up, I can see where they make some of the considerations they do, because one of the things that we fall into as tech guys when we complain about these things is that we think we're the use case. We're not the use case. Used to, you would have the MacBook and you would have the MacBook Pro, and people would get the Pro thinking that was for the heavier use cases. Those distinctions are kind of going away, right? It's just a higher CPU or a slightly better monitor now in a lot of cases.
I always looked at the Pro with having more ports on it so that you could plug into more things at once, simultaneously.
And think about, from this perspective, we're talking about a machine with 4 USB ports on it. If you had a MacBook, it's got one on there. I mean, think about, I mean, you would have to have a hub to start with and then go from there from everything out.
No.
The Air only has 2.
That's the thing. Who is the use case? Who is the customer for this computer? It's not nerds that are... Look, we're nerds.
How can you say
this
that?
This is the thing that drives me nuts on technical podcasts in general, is that you get these folks and they look at this and they poop all over it when they're not the person driving it. If you got a guy who's a race car driver and you put him in a Kia Sorento, he would complain, I floor this thing and it can't go 100 miles an hour in 3 seconds. This is garbage. No, that's not even who it's marketed toward. The average MacBook user, just like the average MacBook Air user, is probably someone who's seldom going to hook into anything, right?
A soccer mom at Starbucks.
Exactly. They don't need 5 USB ports, and they're not slapping USB thumb drives and high precision gaming mice and all these other things on these laptops. They're not doing it. Why have it? Why burden them with it when it's something they're not even going to use anyway?
But me, Brian, me.
It's the people you see at the Apple store that are getting walkthroughs on how to do simple things on their Mac, like check email and do stuff in Safari and stuff like that. You know, I always just boggles my mind when I walk into an Apple store and I see
them have their hand held for a minute.
They're not there for help or something's, or they're not there for something that's broken or to get something replaced. They're literally there so they can be taught how to use their iPhone or their MacBook. Yeah. And I'm just like, and I guess I see it now because I've dated people that I see them doing things on their phones. The most annoying one to me, and I have to bring this up, is they run an app and then they immediately double tap and close like anything that's like, you know, just swipe up on anything that's running in the background. Like somehow that helps things. And I see that more times than not lately. It's like just crazy how many people I see doing that on their phones. That's a tangent, but
the so-called Apple geniuses have fed into that myth. And we can link to articles where this is demonstrably false. In most cases, the way that iOS is designed, if you force quit an app, you're actually doing more harm to your battery than you if you leave it open, because it's in a suspended state. And when you go and you do it, you're forcing all of that data to be reloaded back into memory again. You're better off just leaving, unless it's something like a Maps app or something that's accessing the GPS or something that's constantly playing audio. There's a couple of cases you could do it, but that drives me nuts. And there are people that work at the Apple store who have perpetuated that stupid myth. Yeah, that's probably true. So I'm with you on that. That's an annoyance of mine as well. But
to go off Jim's comment, you know, I walk in and see the 90-year-old lady trying to figure out how to use her Gmail on her phone. And normally I would walk by and just go, savages. But now, if I would only say that if we were in a Microsoft store. Since we're all, you know, wonderful Steve's children in the Apple store, I won't call them savages.
Well, do remember that these were the computers that were targeted for the everyday user. And there's a lot more of them than there are of us. That's the thing, that it's funny to watch people that are power users get really spun up about it when, if you're the type of person who needs it, you have the ability to add these peripherals to do what you need to do. But in most cases, the average user won't do it. I can tell you out of my own, I am a power user. And yet, and some of this stuff would cause me an annoyance when I eventually do go with a new MacBook, which will happen at some point. I'm going to be bit by these same things. My complaining will be delayed. But at the same time, on an average daily basis, I'm not slapping in thumb drives. I'm sharing things with people over the cloud, even if it's a cloud that I don't like. You know, it's those paradigms can be adjusted over time, right? And the only way that you force that change, you drive that change, is to make people sort of adapt it because it becomes the easier thing. People do what's easiest.
And open your mind a little bit.
Not just open your mind, but if you give people the ability to do something the way that they've always done it, they will always pick it that way to do it.
Open your mind and buy a dongle.
So, and herein is the beauty of Apple. It's that they're made for the every man, but also that power users like ourselves would prefer these over other choices as well. So, you know, the power users at my company, we bring our own Macs and we use our Macs and we have VMs with Windows to do stuff we need to do. But the most savvy power users are the people who have, you know, are using their Macs. Yet it's also the product that you could get for your 90-year-old grandma, and she would have a better chance of getting stuff done on there than she would on, you know, some Chromebook or otherwise. That's why we're here. That's the beauty of Apple, is that it's both the easiest thing to use.
The best thing to use.
And also the most powerful thing that we can get, the best thing to use. Yeah, it's both cases. And so I think that's really why they are what they are these days, and that's tough to keep up, and that's why they get the most criticism from all directions. That's why Samsung can build something that blows up, and we all kind of laugh about it and go on. But if Apple did something like that, it would be the end of the world. It's just they're held to a higher standard.
Yeah, it's just that for the power user, though, it's easy to lose sight of that. I have a friend that I talk to on a pretty regular basis who's a diehard PC guy. And he loses his mind every time there's a new Apple announcement. But can you believe they're doing this? This is so ridiculous. Can you believe you can't take your own Mac apart and do this and this and this? And my counter argument for that is I can't take my television apart and do things that I would have done. There were times 40 years ago, you could buy build your own television kits. I mean, this is before all of our times. We're not that old. But I actually do know a guy who's my age who, when he was growing up in Germany, he found a build your own TV kit and would do that. And he would build these things, and they're becoming more like appliances. You know, I don't know. I don't find some of these things. I think the thing that Apple does is they pick a technology they think is superior and they try to nudge you toward it. You still have the ability to do what you did before. You may have to pay the dongle tax, or you can go, you know what? Do I really need to do it this way? Do I really need to keep doing and going down this path? Or can I try and get behind this new technology? And if once I get used to it, is the barrier to adoption the fact that it's inferior, or is the barrier to adoption is that I'm old and I don't like to change? For most people, it's the latter. They just don't like to change. Well, I've always done it like this, right? You know, I used to use this as a use case with my wife. It took her forever once she got used to doing something on a computer, getting her to do it any other way was a nightmare, because she's not somebody that enjoys learning something new. It's a utility. It is an appliance to her because she wants to get something out of it. She wants to press the button. This result happens, and then she goes about her day. Having to learn something new wasn't fun. Over the years, due to things like forced iOS upgrades, she's had to adapt to this, and her paradigm has gradually changed. If I were to compare her now, being older, to when she was younger, she's actually more flexible now in learning new stuff, older, than she was when she was younger. And it's strange to me, but again, if you're in that mode of constant evolution, if you're using something, your example of Windows XP, it hung around for like 15 years or something, right? I mean, I see kiosks and things that are still running Windows XP. That is the thing that you never want to get into of, well, this is good enough, so we're just going to keep this around forever. You got to move that needle forward, and the only way to do it is to force people. So moving kind of along just a little bit, because we've really railed and complained on the dongle tax. The neatest thing, of course, the touch bar has the ability to display graphics. It has your keyboard functions that can be changed on a whim from a software developer. Really kind of nice. It's powered by an ARM-based T1 chip. So people were wondering, when are we ever going to get a Mac that has an ARM in it? Well, technically, we do have a Mac that has an ARM-based processor in it now, even if it is just a supplemental function. The TechCrunch ran an article this morning saying that there's a variant of watchOS that powers it, which is, again, fascinating to me. It's like the equivalent of the Series 1 Apple Watch chip that's powering it. So that's kind of cool.
So is it like two computers, or is it like a VM?
It's just a supplemental processor, and those functions are offloaded to it. Not really so much as a VM. I think of it like in the way that you would think of a graphics card, or, I mean, essentially, if you think about it, it's not doing much more than that, I wouldn't think. But you had to have something that had the secure enclave in it, since it does Touch ID. So it is kind of like a secondary computer for those types of things. So being able to do Touch ID is kind of nice from your Mac. That'll be kind of cool. Though with the unlock with your Apple Watch, I use that all the time. I was reluctant to enable the two-factor authentication because I see how it goes badly for people. And I've read a few horror stories, but it's actually been pretty good for me. Once your devices are trusted, you don't seem to have to go through the enter your password plus these digits again and again, which is nice. But now when I sit down to my Mac and it automatically doesn't unlock, I'm like, what's wrong with this thing? Because occasionally it will fail, but more often than not, it works. But no, being able to do that with your thumbprint from the Mac is pretty cool. What else have we got that's new in this? So you can push two 5K displays with a MacBook Pro on the 15-inch, or four 4K displays. If anything were going to make me buy it, the fact that you can do that is pretty awesome. I think that's nice. One of the reasons I went with a 5K iMac, other than the fact that I'm more of a fan of desktop computers and laptops, is that, you know, it's a 5K display. So with this MacBook Pro being able to do that, that's pretty kick-ass. You also have the wide color gamut on the MacBook Pro, and it does the variable refresh rate for the pixels. So if something doesn't have to change, it won't refresh those pixels. It's supposed to make the battery life last longer. What else? The 15-inch, your GPU does 130% better graphics than the previous gen, and the 13-inch has 103% better graphics than the previous generation. The other cool thing that was announced was the 27-inch LG display. It's a 5K display, and I guess they worked with Apple pretty closely to tune that for the MacBook Pro. And Apple had kind of confirmed, I think Nilay Patel from the Verge got the word from Apple saying that they're pretty much out of the external display business. So this, if you're wanting an external display that's 5K, that's Apple blessed, the LG one that was announced this week is your best bet.
There's just still my question of, can I connect that LG 5K to my late 2014 iMac 27? Because on the product page, it says Thunderbolt 3 is a requirement.
If Thunderbolt 3 is a requirement, you can't do it.
That sucks.
Sucks for me because mine's a year newer than yours, right? And I still can't do it. There is no iMac that's currently released that you could do that with.
My MacBook Pro will do it.
Thanks for reminding me, Jim.
I can run two of them if I wanted. I'm gonna go out and just buy two of those. Blow the budget totally out the water.
Your $3,500 ceiling.
I was about to say, if you're bitching about the dongle, I don't think we have to worry about you running two 5K displays anytime soon.
Yeah, that would kind of be blowing that out the water. And I'm going to be using it so rarely at home. I mean, I've got a 34-inch widescreen that I love at home. And I don't even need this screen that I have is ridiculous overkill for how much I'm working from home now. But it's here and I love it. So
I'm fortunate enough to have the same 34-inch monitor at home as I do at work. And it spoiled me to the point that I hate using like a 15-inch display. I don't ever like using my laptop as a laptop in that regard because I like having the real estate from such large screens.
Oh, well, hello. I mean, I'm going from 34 inches at home, and right now I'm traveling with a 13-inch MacBook Pro, and that's what I use on the road. That's why I really wanted to go to 15 way back in March, and I just kept putting it off until the new ones came out because, you know, I wanted more real estate while I was on the road.
That was another thing that made me wanted to move to the new MacBook Pros because, like I said, I have that pre-Retina model. So I'm going from 1280 by 800 to 5000 by 3000 on my 5K, and the fonts are way sharper, and you know it's definitely a night and day type situation.
There was so much I wanted to get to this week, but it looks like we're kind of running out of time. So to
damn it, Jim.
Oh, your dongle whining.
No, I think it's a good discussion. I think it's maybe a little more nerdy. Like you said, it's kind of an our problem. But I tend to think if somebody's listening to this podcast, they're probably not the everyman. They're probably closer to us than they are normal people, besides, you know, wives and moms and girlfriends and stuff.
Well, they just listen because you're on it.
Yeah, I'm loved.
I totally lost my train of thought there for a second. What was I going to say?
You were going to say, I really wanted those AirPods, and now they're like not coming anytime. Like, did they give a date at all?
They did not give a date at all. So Apple.
Apple moved them to Kickstarter.
Well, if that were the case, Jim would absolutely be ordering them already.
Not buy them on Craigslist.
I do not understand you, Mr. Doesn't have the buying habits of a 43-year-old man with a job.
I like nice stuff on a budget.
Jim likes going to the bazaar, and he likes haggling over the price of his cantaloupes.
I'm going to call him scratched and dented.
Open box.
Ah, open box, Jim. Yeah, so, okay. When's your expected arrival date, Jim?
Mine is between the 18th and the 25th, I believe. That was the first initial date that was available. I know I checked last night or this morning. The first ship date is all the way out to November 29th now through like the first week of December. So hopefully I can get mine before I travel for Thanksgiving. That's my goal, and that'll give me something to do to keep me from visiting with my family and setting up my new MacBook Pro.
What about you, Brad? When does yours arrive?
The email said December 6th through December 12th. And mind you, I think Jim and I both ordered ours maybe 12 to 16 hours apart from each other, mine after his. And the first date, Jim said, was really about, you know, realistically about 2 weeks before mine. And now he says it's pushing the, you know, the last week of November, but I'm still first to second week. So.
And that was a 15 that I was looking at. So it could be that the 13s are pushed out further because the demand is higher.
And I realize if you don't customize them, if you can just buy one straight off the shelf and it's like the basic model that you would just pick up at the store, you know, you could probably have it in 3 days. I don't mean 3 days from order day, but at least, you know, 3 days from the day you ordered it, if you ordered it, say, 2 weeks from now.
There's no fun in that. Max it out. Go big or go home. Well, I think that that should about cover for this week. So we probably won't get your impressions until a much later show. But that, you know, overall, do you feel good about your purchases?
I'm very excited. I'm going to go dongle shopping today.
I feel good about it.
All the adapters, all the things. That's the biggest thing whenever they change the tech and I get something and I tell my wife, oh, it'll only be X amount of dollars. Credit card statement comes in. What's all this other stuff? Well,
it's $100 more than you said.
I'm lucky if it were only $100. That would be getting off easy. It's usually like, why do you spend like $300 more? It's like, well, I had to accessorize.
That was like me. I just bought a bike, and so the bike was expensive to begin with, and then I had to get, you know, a helmet and a pump and a patch kit and a seat bag and lights for the front and lights for the back and
mount for your iPhone.
A mount for my iPhone and those fancy shorts with the butt padding built in. And I was like, wow, there's so much stuff to buy, and there's so many more things to buy. It's like a a hole, you could just jump down and infinitely accessorize. And so,
well, if you took up golfing, you'd buy an expensive set of clubs, and then you'd wind up buying every other little accessory you needed for it, like the GPS that mounts to the dash of the golf cart and whatnot to tell you exactly how far you are away from the hole and all that. So it's all kind of the same. You have your sort of hobby umbrellas, and you have to pretty much buy all of the hobby accessories.
And at least this hobby is helping me get fit, so there's that.
Every hobby has accessories. Yeah, we didn't talk about that. Jim has really been racking up the activity in the app since we're doing the sharing now. And mine, ironically, has gone down. I had a mole removed this week off my ribs in that area. So I have a nice big stitch, or actually several stitches. The doctor was originally like, yeah, you can resume in like a couple of days. You can probably do some more cardio. And I look at the sheet that she gave me, and it's like, don't do anything like that for 7 to 10 days or until the stitches come out. So I'm like, maybe I better pay attention to, maybe I better do what I'm actually told in this case, and I'll just take a week off.
It's like you've done 1,000 sit-ups, and then all of a sudden you're pulling stitches into the mix.
The other thing that I wanted to mention before we wrap it up is I'm so excited that my gigabit internet will be installed Tuesday. I can't tell you.
It's pretty sweet.
The excitement of having 1 gig up and 1 gig. To me, that I will take that over a new MacBook any day of the week. My crash plan backups are no longer limited to 10 megs up. Huzzah, this will be a happy day. The cable company that shall not be named, but everyone knows who they are because they're the biggest, currently charges me $100 a month for my business class service where I get 50 something, or 60 down and 10 up. It's been nice because it was unlimited, which, you know, this said cable company has been known to implement caps on people, but mine's business class, so I don't have such restrictions. Apparently this fiber in my yard was like a harvest. It was planted in the spring and is now being reaped in the fall. So I'm the last one out of all of my friends here in this area to get it. I even have friends that live in a swamp in Louisiana that have it before I do. And I had the fiber. I had it before all of them. And I don't understand why it's taking this long. Any closing comments from you guys?
I'll be off next week doing some corporate weekend. So I think Brian said they're going to have somebody. We're going to have somebody sit in for me. So I'll see everybody in a couple of weeks.
See y'all later.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. We can be found on Twitter. I'm at Brian B. That's B-R-I-A-N-B. Jim is at Big Jim. That's B-I-G-J-I-M. And Brad is at Meester Idle. That's M-E-E-S-T-E-R-I-D-L-E. Thanks for listening, and we hope to talk to you next time.